Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners. Hello, and welcome to As It Is, the current events program for podcast and broadcast from VOA Learning English. On today's program, we tell you about an armed group of ranchers who have occupied federal land in the western state of Oregon. Later on the program, we will tell you about some of the reaction to comments people believed were from the leader of the Oregon occupation protest. Remember, we always present these stories at a slower speed so you can understand if English is not your first language. And we try to use words, sentences, and paragraphs that are written especially for people who are learning English. Now, about the situation in Oregon. The armed protesters continue to occupy a U.S. National Wildlife Refuge in the western state of Oregon. Some experts say the protesters have been influenced by the extremist militia movement to fight against the federal government. The protesters moved in while the Malheur National Wildlife Refuge was closed during the New Year's holiday. The leader of the protest is Ammon Bundy. He is a rancher from Nevada. Bundy said the occupying group has named itself Citizens for Constitutional Freedom. Bundy said he wants the government to consider claims that federal officials have mistreated local ranchers. They are also bringing attention to the case of Dwight and Stephen Hammond. They are two Oregon ranchers who were found guilty of setting fires illegally on public land. The ranchers were ordered to return to prison after a judge found they had not served enough of their 5-year sentences. They have since returned to prison. Bundy has been involved in standoffs with government officials before. In 2014, Bundy, his father Cliven, and his brother took part in another armed standoff with federal officials. They had refused to pay money for grazing their cattle on federal land. The standoff ended when the U.S. government returned cattle to the family that it had seized. John Freemuth is an expert in land use at Boise State University in Idaho. He says the protesters are dealing with issues of concern to Western ranchers. The government controls huge areas of land in the Western United States. That includes more than half of the state of Oregon. Freemuth said there has been a change in public values about wildlife protection and public lands. He says this has left ranchers feeling squeezed by all these changes, new environmental laws, and they feel they're not listened to. The loosely organized occupation group has brought together people with many concerns, including gun rights. Oregon is one of 45 states with so-called open carry laws, which permit people to carry firearms. One protester, John Ritzheimer, has led armed anti-Islamic protests in his home state of Arizona. Ritzheimer posted an emotional declaration on YouTube warning that there's no stopping us. John Freemuth says most Oregonians are appalled at the confrontation. He says they consider the occupiers outside activists who have rolled in, armed and threatening, and have gone way beyond what the local folks are protesting. Ryan Lenz is with the Southern Poverty Law Center. The organization studies extremist groups. Lenz says some ranchers who have real grievances with the federal government have been influenced by what he calls fringe ideologies. He says anti-government extremists should not control what is lawful in a country where we have a long-standing system of jurisprudence as organized by our courts. Rick Eaton is a researcher on extremist groups at the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles. He believes federal officials have shown restraint. Eaton says, to their credit, the government has backed off and has not created a standoff. Many standoffs end without violence or injury, such as the occupation in 1972 of the Bureau of Indian Affairs in Washington, D.C. Others, like one in Ruby Ridge, Idaho, in 1992, and another near Waco, Texas, ended with the deaths of civilians and federal agents. Sheriff David Ward of Harney County in Oregon addressed the armed protesters on Monday. He said, "It is time for you to leave our community. Go home to your own families and end this peacefully." You are listening to As It Is from VOA, Learning English. Next, we hear more about the story of ranchers occupying a wildlife refuge in Oregon. The story has spread on social media, but has raised questions. Ana Mateo tells us how the name of civil rights activist Rosa Parks became involved.
Maybe you are following the story about the men who are occupying a U.S. federal building in rural Oregon. Some believe that Ayman Bundy and his followers are taking a stand. This morning on Twitter, people expressed their outrage when a Twitter account that people thought belonged to Bundy compared what's happening in Oregon to what Parks did 60 years ago. Rosa Parks is a hero from the American Civil Rights Movement in the 1950s. Rosa Parks's name was mentioned on Twitter all day as people expressed their opinions. Gwen Ifill hosts a political talk show on PBS in the United States. She wrote, "I was so excited to see Rosa Parks trending. Then, cruel disappointment." But later in the day, people said they didn't think the account at Ayman_Bundy belonged to the militia leader. A reporter from the broadcaster MSNBC, who was following the story in Oregon, says Bundy does not have a Twitter account. Until then, several stories had already been written about Bundy's alleged comparison.
And that's our program for today. Keep listening for international news issues as we tell you about North Korea's recent claim that it has set off a hydrogen bomb. I'm Mario Ritter.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA, Learning English. This is In the News. The United States and South Korea have ordered their military forces on the Korean Peninsula on high alert following North Korea's nuclear test this week. On Thursday, the U.S. and South Korean defense ministers discussed measures to answer the latest nuclear test. South Korean Defense Minister Han Min-koo said both ministers agreed that North Korea needs to pay the price for its provocation. North Korea is believed to have enough plutonium to make 8 to 12 nuclear weapons. Many security experts say that is more than enough to answer any supposed threat of invasion from the United States or South Korea. The North Korean government reportedly restarted a uranium enrichment center last year to produce more for nuclear weapons. The U.S.-based Institute for Science and International Security estimated that North Korea could have between 20 and 100 nuclear weapons by 2020. The test this week followed reports of a failed North Korean submarine-launched ballistic missile test. If North Korea could develop such a missile, it would have the ability to strike anywhere in the world, including the United States. North Korea continues to develop missiles with the ability to travel great distances. The country is believed to have 1,000 missiles that can reach targets in South Korea and Japan. These aren't really so much for retaliation or defense anymore, said Robert Kelly, a North Korea expert with Pusan National University. These are kind of like society-breaking weapons. If you drop a hydrogen bomb in Seoul or a couple on South Korea's big cities, you're not going to just kill a lot of people. You are also threatening the ability of North Korea to continue to function as a state. Some lawmakers in Seoul say South Korea should develop its own nuclear weapons to answer the growing nuclear threat from the North. There have also been calls in Seoul to set up a U.S. Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System. China reportedly opposes deployment of the system to East Asia because of concerns it could be used to stop Chinese missiles. Robert Kelly said he would like to see South Korea start taking THAAD more seriously. He said, "I would like to see the Americans and South Koreans and Japanese start really working seriously on regional missile defense. But you know, if we don't go down that route and diplomacy doesn't seem to be working, my sense is you will see people starting to call for airstrikes." Other observers said the United States should push for a wider economic action to punish North Korea. Robert Manning is with the Atlantic Council. He said, "Take away Kim Jong-un's credit cards. I think that would cause some real pain at a time when he has promised that his regime is going to improve the economy, which is a long shot to start with." U.S. and United Nations sanctions are already in place against North Korea and its leader, Kim Jong-un, for the country's earlier violations of nuclear treaties. Barry Bleckman is a national security expert with the Stimson Center. He said that, "We got the UN Security Council to establish tighter and tighter sanctions. We have gotten them pushed out of the international banking system. But it is still not enough so long as the Chinese continue to allow a kind of fundamental level of survival to continue there." He added that efforts to increase pressure on North Korea would have limited results.